First of all, they've had 5-6 days of their lives taken up in this process, so they're going to take their time in reviewing the evidence and deciding what the result is going to be. I think that 2.5 hours that they spent yesterday is really only enough time to sit down, everybody to vent their opinions about what they want to talk about a little bit, and elect a foreman. I don't attach any significance to the fact that they didn't reach a verdict last night. Now, I do think they'll reach a verdict today because they want to spend another night in a hotel room. But I think today is when they're going to really hash through the evidence.
And let's discuss the evidence. What are the most important pieces of evidence, do you think, in this case?
Well, I think the most important piece of evidence is that nobody else saw a gun. And if you're in a crowded parking lot at a gate station, and the car drives off into a crowded parking lot where there's a loop, and nobody else sees a firearm except Michael Dunn, I think that that's, first of all, a very difficult case to believe. And then the second major factor is Rhonda Rauer. How do you drive
Michael Dunn's girlfriend?
Michael Dunn's fiance / girlfriend. How do you, spend the night in a B&B, drive down to Satellite Beach, Florida, and never mention that you saw a firearm? He said, I felt threatened. He said that I thought they were coming at me, but he never mentions a firearm. And I just think most people find that to be incredible.
As we await a verdict in the Michael Dunn trial, we want your thoughts. Give us a call at 549-2937. Defense attorney Corey Strolla, in presenting his closing arguments to the jury, said that jurors need to consider wrapping the state's Stand Your Ground law around Michael Dunn as a sort of shield, that if they find, based on the evidence, that Mr. Dunn felt he was in fear for his life, that he was within his rights, within the law, to shoot at Jordan Davis and the other teens that were in that SUV. What about that argument?
Well, first of all, I don't really think that Stand Your Ground really works well in this situation. This is more justifiable use of force, because Stand Your Ground sort of applies. It applies in a situation where you have the opportunity to retreat, but you don't take that opportunity. And Dunn's testimony was, no, there was a shotgun coming out the window being pointed at me. At that point, you really don't have a safe way to retreat. So Stand Your Ground is not sort of a good fit. Then we get to this justifiable use of force. If somebody is pointing a shotgun at you, then it's justified to use deadly force in response to deadly force. But like I say again, nobody saw that shotgun besides Michael Dunn.
There are sensitive racial aspects to this case.
Oh, this is all racial. If this had been an African American shooting another African American, this would be on page B3 of the newspaper, and it would not be in the national news media at all.
Let's discuss why it's in the national news media. For those that have criticized the media, including our program, for why are you focusing so heavily on this case?
It comes right on the heels of the verdict in the Zimmerman case.
Right.
And there are a lot of people who are angered about the fact that Zimmerman was acquitted and Trayvon Martin was killed, and there are a lot of people saying that if it happens again, it just shows that the justice system is unfair, and a lot of people really want that. They're emotionally invested in Michael Dunn being convicted.
African Americans tend to have the perception that Michael Dunn unfairly fired on a group of mouthy teenagers and mistakenly believed they were a threat to him. Others who support Michael Dunn, and he has a website set up in his defense, feel that he legitimately had reason to believe he was threatened, and that he acted appropriately. It is the difference in perception is absolutely stark.
Yes, but by the same token, there are an awful lot of whites that feel the exact same way as the African American community did. I mean, there's no question about the fact that if there's no gun, there's nobody who's going to support what Michael Dunn did. And I think the people out there that are saying that they think that he was justified is a very small minority, in my opinion.
And it's 549-2937. As the jury in the Michael Dunn trial resumes deliberations at 10 o'clock this morning, we want your thoughts on the case. Hank on the north side is holding. Hello, Hank. Thanks for your call. Good morning.
Good morning. How you doing?
Great, thanks.
My thoughts on the case, this could have been quickly resolved if Mr. Dunn would have just went ahead and got his gas and left. Because too many times when I'm driving in traffic or whatever, I see a lot of young men having their music up loud, and sometimes it vibrates my window. That doesn't mean I'm going to stop my car and get out and try to make a scene with that individual. because if there was no law passed about that type of noise audience from a person's car, then he could have avoided that. Because if you think about the similar situation at the Metropolitan Park, nobody didn't come from the neighborhood and blast everybody in the park saying cut the music down. They went through court process, and the decibel was cut down, even though the park festivities was going to still continue. So he could have took the same situation and just say, hey, I'm going to get my gas, and I'm getting out of here. You know, I don't understand these people with the loud music coming from their cars, it vibrates the window. And he could have pursued through legal action from that standpoint, talking to his legal representative or whatever.
Yeah, Hank, thanks. And he's referring to the Welcome to Rockville concerts next door to us at Metropolitan Park, and neighbors across the river have complained about that noise. Thanks, Hank.
Yeah, I think Hank makes a very good point. And you know, we ought to contrast this with the shooting in Tampa, in the police, movie theater over texting in the theater. You know, here are two mildly inconvenient situations for the shooter, and they escalated into a murder. And I think that if there's a public safety tip here, it's that politeness and civility will really keep you a lot safer than dropping an F-bomb on somebody. If somebody asks you politely to turn down your music and your response is, screw you, I'm not going to do it, or I'm not going to stop texting, you are escalating that situation, and you don't know where it's going to end up.
And by the same token, if you have a permit to carry, you're supposed to be exercising additional restraint and judgment before whipping out your weapon.
Oh, there's no question about the fact that there's nothing about having a concealed weapons permit that justifies taking any action like this. But I think that if you're going to be in a polite society, if you're a polite person in a polite society, the likelihood of you getting shot by somebody with a concealed weapons permit goes down substantially.
Lots of calls as we await a verdict in the Michael Dunn trial. What do you think? Give us a call, 549-2937. Let's go up to Georgia. Alex in Kingsland is on the line. Hello, Alex. How are you today?
Hello. Oh, I'm just fine. I'd like to, you know, weigh in very quickly. I'd like to say, you know, I'm white. I'm a staunch supporter of gun rights. I have a concealed carry permit myself. I carry frequently. But I have to agree with one of your commentators that it is very important for those of us who carry, to hold ourselves to a higher standard and to be held to a higher standard, because we're bearing lethal force. And it disturbs me that one of your commentators can say, if you're a polite person in a polite society, your odds of being killed are lower. Because to me, it's absurd that being polite or being impolite, either one of them should have any effect on whether or not you're gunned down in cold blood.
Alex, thanks for the call. And by the way, we just have one guest today. It's Rod Sullivan with Florida Coastal.
I'm going to stick to what I said. I think that, quite frankly, each of these situations escalated from a minor social interaction to a deadly confrontation, and that the reason they escalated was because of the fact that there was not a polite response to a request.
What about the larger argument, though, that some have made that don't live in Florida, frankly, that the appearance is being given out to the rest of the country, right or wrong, that we've got a Wild West type mentality in this state.
And I've seen that on Dr. Drew. I watched that on the other night, and there were a bunch of guests saying, I can't believe that a guy carried a loaded gun in his car. And I'm thinking, well, you don't live in Florida, because there are a lot of people who have loaded guns in their glove compartments of their car. I can't, because I work at an educational institution, but other people do. And I think if you live in Florida, that's one of the things you need to be cognizant of. And, you know, one of the police officers said that to Michael Dunn when he's questioning him. He says, you realize if they had a gun and you had asked them to turn on down their music, they would have shot you. And I was thinking, boy, that's an odd thing for a police officer to say to a potential criminal defendant. But it is the reality in Florida. There are a lot of firearms and a lot of vehicles, and you need to be aware of that.
Joe in Arlington has some thoughts for us. Hello, Joe. Good morning, Joe.
Good morning to you all. I'd like to make a couple of points on this conversation. One, I'm sort of annoyed by the fact that this is considered a high-profile case. It's simply murder as far as consumers or viewers are concerned. This guy, for what he called being annoyed by music gave him the right to pull out and shoot the kid three times, not once, twice, but three times, empty 10 rounds in the car. And he said he wasn't trying to kill. My next point is, Mr. Dunn, for what it's worth, you do not have the right to police the street. It's just like if I'm living next to my neighbor. The music is loud. I ask them to turn it down. They refuse. I call the police because there are laws in place to handle that. He was on Gates' property. He had no right to try to police the area. That's my thought.
Joe,
have a great day.
Thanks, Joe, for your comments. Ryan in Mandarin is on the line. Hello, Ryan. Go ahead. You're on the air. Okay, Ryan, give us a call back and the number to join the show, 549-2937. Let's go to Tom on the west side. Hello, Tom. How are you today?
I'm wonderful. How about yourself?
All right, thanks.
Well, what I'm thinking is that they pretty much have to find him guilty because his testimony just very much lacks credibility. And, you know, the driving off thing is just bizarre in the extreme. And, you know, he wants to blame the Jacksonville Sheriff's Office for not finding a weapon. Well, if he'd called the Sheriff's Office immediately, then they could have probably done a proper search. And if there was a weapon, it probably would have been found. So all the blame really goes on him.
Thank you, Tom. Rod Sullivan with Florida Coastal. How will those elements of the case impact the jury's thinking? Michael Dunn did not call 911 immediately, and he left the scene.
No, all those things are very, very bad for Michael Dunn's defense. And I think they, you know, they speak to the fact that he did not, at the time, think that he did something with justification. And it's just one of the multitude of facts that make this a very difficult case for Michael Dunn and his attorney to try to prove.
Jeff in St. Augustine emails the show. He is charged separately with attempted murder, correct? It would seem, given the number of shots fired, an attempted murder conviction is needed if Jordan Davis had a gun. If Dunn is found not guilty, Florida will be that much more lawless in the future.
Well,
lawless.
He makes a very good point, and I would analyze this case from backwards to forwards. The very first charge, if I was sitting in the jury, the very first charge I'd want to address is, did he fire into an occupied vehicle? And the answer is yes. And did he have any justification? What is your justification for firing three shots into the back of a fleeing vehicle? That's not self-defense under any sense of imagination. So you get, you know, the charge of firing into the occupied vehicle, you get three attempted murder counts, and then you leave for the end the toughest questions, which are the initial shooting. Was it first degree, second degree? Was there justifiable use of force? But once you've already convicted the guy of three attempted murders and another felony, I think it makes the rest of the discussions a lot easier.
Calls from across the listening area this morning. We'll go to your calls in just a moment. Coming in from the South Side, Switzerland, Murray Hill, and more, we have a caller on the line who says they were in the jury pool. Hello. Good morning.
Good morning. I just want to make a factual correction. Michael Dunn did not have a concealed weapons permit. There is a statute in Florida that says that you can carry a gun in your vehicle. I'm sure your guest can elaborate on this, as long as you are two steps away from using it. So two steps would be a gun in a holster in your glove compartment, or
okay,
an unloaded gun with the clip out in a holster in your glove compartment. In other words, it takes two steps to get to the gun.
Right.
You know, this is one of the points that I think may come up on appeal, because one of the things that Michael Dunn tried to talk about was this. He said three steps. I'm three steps away from having a weapon in my vehicle. I have a gun without a round in the chamber, in a holster, in my glove box. And the judge stopped him from talking about this analysis of three steps. And then John Guy said, well, did you fire a warning shot? And
he said he thought that was illegal, didn't he?
I was going to say that they should, in my opinion, have allowed them to explore that more, because the prosecutor's office here in Jacksonville gives you 10 years for firing a warning shot. So it's really not a good argument to say you should have fired a warning shot.
Ma'am, so you were in the jury pool, but you were not selected to be on the jury. Tell us about your experience.
Well, it was very intense. It was a long 3-day process. And all I want to say is, because you know, in the course of that, you get to know a lot of the people who are selected. And I have to say that it's a very diverse group of people. I think they have a lot of integrity, and I think they'll come to the best decision they have and apply the law as it's supposed to be applied and with the judge's instructions based on the facts of the case.
Why do you think you were stricken from the pool?
I'd really rather not say. There were 62 of us. There are a lot of reasons. Mm. Each of us had to answer some questions individually and as a group, and I just think that you never know why. We were pretty much told, you know, don't overthink it. Everybody, you don't know what's going on in either of the attorneys' minds or, you know, what they're looking for in their jury pool.
Yeah, don't take it personally.
Pardon?
Don't take it personally. I have stricken.
Oh, no. I've and in stricken... 2020 hindsight, I can make some speculation, you know, from a personal standpoint, having listened to some of the people that were selected, you know, speak. But I think it would be truly just my speculation.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks for your call.
Thanks.
You know, you mentioned the Zimmerman verdict and the parallels that have been drawn between that case and this case. That was controversial in one aspect because of the makeup of the jury pool. This jury pool is a bit more diverse.
It certainly appears to be balanced both between men and women and minorities and whites. And yes, it appears to be a very diverse pool.
Meredith in Murray Hill is on the line with us this morning. Hello, Meredith. Thanks for your call today.
Hi. I'm calling because I was just wanting to reiterate, I don't think you have to be African-American to think that Michael Dunn shot at this car because it was full of black boys. And I think it was racially charged. And also, in talking with my family, we talked about the fact that I have a younger brother who is white, and he drives around with his music playing so loudly in his car. And I'm sure if someone told him to turn his music down, he would be just as rude at 18 years old. And we were thinking, if he was black, would his life have been different? Would he have been prey to some man who would say he was scared of the car of a black boy and be harassed? So I just wanted to point that out.
Yeah, Meredith, thank you for that. Ryan in Mandarin is back on the line. Ryan, thanks for calling back. Good morning, Ryan.
Hi, how are you?
Great, go ahead.
I was working across the street the night it happened at the CVS right next door. Yeah.
What'd you see? Tell what was it like? Tell us.
So I probably got up, I don't know, sometime around nighttime. And I just walked out and I saw a whole bunch of cops across the street. A lot of lights everywhere. And then later on that night, I drove over to the gas station and I just asked what happened and they said somebody had gotten shot. I don't know, just thought it was scary.
Well, you know, it's interesting that the very first thing the jury has asked to see is all the surveillance video at the gate. And I think they think that there's something that must be missing. There should have been I think we're all a little bit surprised that there's not a camera that shows this particular area of the gate station parking lot. Mm. And they're going to want to satisfy themselves that there wasn't a key piece of evidence that was missed.
And it's about 20 minutes of tape that they'll be looking at, isn't it? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Let's go down to Switzerland and get Foster on the air. Foster, good morning.
I called because I'd like to say two things. I got a comment on the case about the racial part. But first thing was I want to agree with your guest and disagree with the person who called in with the concealed weapon permit saying you shouldn't be polite. A friend of mine, who I did business with down in Switzerland, in Springfield, had a business down there, and he got shot, and I went to see him about 10 days after he was shot, and I asked him, why do you think you got shot? He says, because I told the guy, F you. And so I believe if somebody has a weapon or you have one of these situations, I agree with your guest that you should be polite to people. Civility is what keeps a lot of things from escalating. And I think the concealed weapon permit guy is just one of the people who's a gun nut, and I have a gun, I like guns, but gun nuts think they're always right, other people are always wrong, and part of the paranoia is this racial thing. White people have become afraid of black people. And this is a racial case, as well as a case of somebody using a gun when they shouldn't. And the politeness might have kept it from happening, but it still shouldn't have happened.
Foster, thanks. Lots of calls. People calling him from all over Northeast Florida and up in Georgia this morning. Let's go out to the beaches and welcome Carolyn to the program. Carolyn, hello to you.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead, please.
Okay. I wanted to make the point that blaming people who are not not nice to each other. It's sort of like blaming a woman for getting raped for wearing seductive clothing. And I also agree with the former caller saying, you know, it's people in are afraid of each other in this world, and I don't. It's hard to know why. I'm not afraid of people, but there are other people who are afraid of each other, and they carry guns because they think that something is right around the corner.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the comments that I have.
Yeah, Carolyn, thanks. And it's a sad state of affairs, isn't it?
Yeah, I just think that the only thing you can do to protect your own safety is to do what you do, is you control your own conduct. And if you're not polite as a matter of simple civility in your human interactions, be polite because you may be putting yourself at risk of getting shot by somebody who you meet on a bad day.
That's a scenario that people in other parts of the country, where the culture is quite different, they look at Florida and think, how awful. It doesn't help the Florida tourism department.
No, it certainly doesn't. Is Florida less polite than other places in the country? I don't think so. I don't know what to say about that. The fact is, we have a lot of guns in Florida, and maybe you should be a little bit more polite here.
Let's go to Mike in Ponte Vedra, get his thoughts. Mike, good morning to you.
Hey there, Melissa. I have a question for your guest, which is, what would the perception have been if Dunn was black and the kids were white?
Yeah, I think I said that. This would be on page B3 of the Times Union for one day, and it would not be the national news story that it is.
Oh, Mike hung up. Let's get a few more calls. Anthony in Orange Park has been holding. Hello, Anthony. How are things down your way today?
Things are fine, but it's cold.
Yeah. Stay warm out there.
My comment would have to do with this concept of civility in the society with regards to how guns are used. And I would ask our guest and his opinion with regards to the first Obama State of the Union, and the senator from South Carolina yelled out, "You lie," with regards to civility. And did we not cross a very negative threshold at that point, when the leader of the free world was called a liar out loud in the chambers of Congress?
Actually, no. I think that, quite frankly, you have to look at the forum. And when you're in a forum where there's a political debate going on, pushing the envelope of that debate is, in my opinion, not necessarily a lack of civility. I mean, if you read the history of what has happened on the floor of U.S. Congress, there have been duels, there have been beatings, there have been shootings. I mean, political debate today is very, very mild and calm compared to what it was historically. But when you get out of the community, I think we all have an obligation to be civil to each other, regardless of, you know, race or age or how loud the music is. And I do think it's different.
Lots of callers waiting. Let's try to get just a couple more on the air. Link in Atlantic Beach is on the line with us. Hey, Link. Good morning to you.
Hello, Ms. Ross. How are you this morning?
Okay. Go ahead.
I do agree with the caller, with your guest on one point, and that point was that if this was a case of black-on-black violence, it wouldn't be as publicized in the media. However, I think that most of the responsibility falls on Mr. Dunn as an adult. In that situation, when you're presented with an awkward situation as an adult myself, I don't approach people that are unfamiliar to me and present myself in a way that I'm an authority figure to them in that particular situation. It's not incumbent upon me to actually tell somebody else what to do. Mr. Dunn should have had the sense of, you know, presence of mind actually to just say, hey, it's not my business, let me step back and leave it alone. But instead, he antagonized the situation, and with teenagers, with everything we've seen of teenagers in the news and in our own personal lives, they can be unpredictable. And did he get the response he expected? Probably not. But to retaliate with violence is inexcusable.
Hey, nobody's going to disagree with that. Mr. Dunn's reaction to this is inexcusable. And really, I'm talking to what you as an individual can do to make life more civil.
Paula tweets the show, we are waiting for with anxious anticipation for a decision in the Dunn trial. That's the hashtag if you're on Twitter. They resumed deliberations in just under about a half hour. Your final thoughts, Rod Sullivan?
I think they'll come back with a verdict today. I'm not going to make any predictions on what that verdict is going to be, but I think that from what we've heard from the person who was in the jury pool and what we've seen of the trial, that this has been a very professionally conducted trial. I think Judge Healy, by the way, deserves a big round of applause in the way he handled the trial of this case. And I think we'll get a result, and then it'll go to appeal. But, I just say stay tuned.
Thanks, as always, for being with us.
Thank you.